in the 1970s. This was Leeds speaking years ago.
It was a real shock when all of a sudden his hands were all over me. But it's when he started putting his hand up my skirt. And that was it. That was it.
Journalist Natasha Stoyanov also took the stand and recounted how Trump allegedly pushed her against a wall, forcibly kissed her during a 2005 interview at Mar-a-Lago. The jury was also shown the infamous Access Hollywood video in which Trump brags about grabbing women's genitals without asking permission.
I gotta use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I just kiss. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I can do anything.
In a videotaped deposition shown to the jurors, Trump was asked about his comments in the Access Hollywood tape. He said, quote, historically, that's true with stars. If you look over the last million years, Trump said. Trump also claimed E. Jean Carroll's story was made up and that she wasn't his type. He also said in the tape to the lawyer questioning him in the deposition, you wouldn't be a choice of mine either, to be honest. Trump waived his right to testify in the case, but on Thursday, he told reporters he may return from playing golf in Ireland to testify and confront Carroll.
And I have to go back for a woman that made a false accusation about me, and I have a judge who's extremely hostile. And I'm going to go back, and I'm going to confront this one.
When the judge heard this, he said that Trump has until Sunday at 5 to notify the judge if he will reopen the case and testify. Closing arguments are set for next week, with jury deliberations starting Tuesday. For more, we're joined by Deborah Turkheimer, professor of law at Northwestern University, author of Credible, Why We Doubt Accusers and Protect Abusers. Her New York Times guest essay is headlined The Importance of E. Jean Carroll's Lawsuit Against Donald Trump. Welcome to Democracy Now! Professor Turkheimer, if you can start off by responding to what's happened so far in this case. You have, this is a civil case. E. Jean Carroll could bring women who she didn't know, who had accused Donald Trump of sexually assaulting them. Two of them testified, and two of her dear friends, who she said she told immediately after she said President Trump raped her back in the 90s in a dressing room.
Right. I think it's important to say first that the testimony of an accuser is rarely enough to persuade the jury. That's true inside the courtroom. That's true outside the courtroom. The idea of credibility discounting is a really important one. Credibility discounting is rampant today, and it's been rampant throughout our history. So for E. Jean Carroll to prevail, she's going to need quite a bit of corroborating evidence. She's going to need witnesses who support her story. And that's what we've seen in this trial. As you mentioned, she's brought in two women who heard her describe this account very close in time to the incident alleged. And then she's brought in what we call pattern and practice witnesses, two women who've described sexually aggressive conduct on the part of Donald Trump that allows the jury to see this as part of a kind of pattern that he engages in. You couple that with the Access Hollywood tape, and E. Jean Carroll's lawyers have presented a powerful case, a case that very much offers the jury support for E. Jean Carroll's story.
Now, explain what it means that this is a civil trial. if he is found guilty, what does this mean? And also that at the same time that his lawyer said they rest their case, Donald Trump's playing golf in Ireland saying he's going to testify.
Right. So if E. Jean Carroll prevails, Donald Trump is not found guilty per se. He's found liable. He's found liable for damages because, as you mentioned, this is a civil case, not a criminal case. The burden of proof is lower than what we understand to be proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Here, she's got to show by a preponderance of the evidence, meaning it's more likely than not that he raped her, as she said he did. And if she does that, if she convinces the jury, then the jury again will award her presumably some damages. The same is true of her defamation claim. What's at issue here is damages. Donald Trump does not need to testify. It's somewhat unusual, particularly in a civil case, for a defendant not to to present evidence and particularly to tell his version of events. That's his right. He's obviously made noise about coming back to court at the 11th hour. I think most commentators and observers are skeptical that he's actually going to do that. But of course, Donald Trump is unpredictable, and we'll wait and see what happens this weekend.
Even if he doesn't testify, did it surprise you that not one witness was brought forward by the defense?
Yes, the defense had a witness list. It ended up not calling anyone on that list. But again, typically in a civil case, there are two sides and both sides are going to present some witnesses, particularly because the cross-examination of E. Jean Carroll and the cross-examinations of the other witnesses that she called didn't seem to go especially well. One might have expected the defense to present its own evidence in this case. As you've said, the defense did not.
And Professor Turkheimer, why could E. Jean Carroll bring this case decades later? Explain the law that was just passed in New York.
New York passed a groundbreaking law. It's called the Adult Survivors Act, the only other state to have passed a law like it dealing with adult survivors of sexual violence is California. And it went into effect in November of 2022, providing a one-year essentially look-back window so that there is no statute of limitations that bars claims. Plaintiffs can go back in time as far as they want to go back, as long as they were 18 or older at the time of the incident alleged. And they can bring those claims in civil court. They can sue for damages.
If you can talk about now what this means and why you think this trial is so important, as you talk about in your book, Credible, who is able to bring their cases forward?
Well, this is important because, in part, Donald Trump really has come to represent for so many women and other people and a male sexual entitlement. The book is really about a longstanding tradition in our culture of protecting powerful men from consequences for sexual assault and sexual harassment. And so here we're seeing E. Jean Carroll come forward against all odds many years later, believing and hoping that the culture has shifted some, at least enough for her to be believed. That's not something that she felt she would have been back in the 90s. But now, post hashtag Me Too, and as the Me Too movement moves along, we'll see whether she's able to get that kind of belief and that kind of justice, a measure of justice, it should be said. Again, a civil case. This is not about criminal punishment. This is not being brought by the state. But for E. Jean Carroll to come forward and insist that it happened, that she's not to blame, and that it matters is quite heroic. It's quite brave. And we'll be watching, I think, all of us with great interest to see what this jury of nine individuals decides in the case.
And finally, Deborah Turkheimer, how do you think this case fits into all the other investigations of Donald Trump? It wasn't often included when we talk about the New York Attorney General investigating him, the DA investigating him, the Georgia DA investigating him, the federal government investigating him.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question. Those other investigations focus on Donald Trump's conduct as president, as a business person, and as someone who's left the office of the presidency. These are all somewhat extraordinary and unusual kinds of conduct or misconduct that he's alleged to have engaged in. What's so interesting to me about this case is that the kind of allegation that E. Jean Carroll is articulating is so sadly commonplace. It's so widely experienced by so many individuals in our society. Of course, it's extraordinary that the allegation comes against someone who's been president and who is the top contender for the Republican nomination. But there's so much that's familiar about the allegation and the kind of credibility discounting that's gone on in the case that kept her quiet for so many decades that I think it's relatable to many individuals. And so in that way, it's different from the other kinds of cases, I think.
And the jury being anonymous?
Yes, I think for fairly obvious reasons, the judge wanted the jury to remain anonymous. The jury itself wanted to be anonymous. These are the kinds of allegations that we certainly don't want to see any tampering. We don't want to see any threats against this jury. And this is a high profile case, the highest profile case of this sort that we've seen in our history. And it's really important that the jury is able to do its job.
Deborah Turkheimer, professor of law at Northwestern University, author of the book Credible, Why We Doubt Accusers and Protect Abusers. We'll link to your New York Times op-ed, The Importance of E. Jean Carroll's Lawsuit Against Donald Trump. Coming up, Freedom to Learn, protests held across the country against right-wing efforts to ban books and anti-racism education in schools. In Florida, 14 Dream defenders were arrested, staging a peaceful sit-in inside the offices of Republican governor and possible presidential candidate Ron DeSantis. Back in 30 seconds.
This joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me. This joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me.
Don't you know that?
This joy that I have, the world didn't give it to me.
Oh, I said
the world didn't give it, the world can't take it away.
Oh, this strength that I have, this strength that I have.
The
world didn't give it to me.
This strength that I have.
Oh, yeah.
The world didn't give it to me.
Oh, I said
the world didn't give it. The world can't take it away.
Oh, this love that I have.
This love that I have.
Oh, yeah, now.
This joy by Resistance Revival Chorus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. We end today's show looking at the freedom to learn. This week, protests were held across the United States against right-wing efforts to ban books and anti-racism education in schools. In Florida, 14 Dream defenders were arrested for staging a peaceful sit-in inside the offices of Republican Governor Ron DeSantis and possible 2024 presidential candidate. Also protested new legislation banning abortion after 6 weeks, denying gender-affirming care for youth, rolling back rent control, banning discussions of LGBTQ issues in schools, and cracking down on immigrants and unions.
So we're going to sit here until Ron DeSantis deigns to come back to his office to meet with the people of Florida who have been directly affected by his nonsense and his hate and his pandering and his petty BS.
That was Nyala Summers-Polite, a co-director of Dream Defenders. She was among the first to be arrested during Wednesday's occupation of Governor DeSantis's office. She's joining us now from Miami. Also with us, Professor Kimberly Crenshaw, Executive Director of African American Policy Forum, Professor of Law at both UCLA and Columbia University, joining us from New Orleans. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Nyala, let's begin with you. Explain why you were in Ron DeSantis's office, the possible presidential candidate and governor of Florida. Why'd you get arrested?
Well, Ron DeSantis has been on a rampage with our Florida legislature attacking the rights of all the people in Florida who don't look or think like him. It's been an onslaught of attacks on immigrants, on black people, on drag queens, on queer and trans youth, on renters, on teachers, on union members. I mean, it's just been relentless. And it's the last week of legislative session. Today is actually the last day of our legislative session. And we couldn't end it without, you know, taking courageous action and being heard.
talk about the various bills, one after another, made into law that most concerned you, from reproductive rights to anti-LGBTQ legislation to issues of what teachers can teach in school.
Yeah, I mean, DeSantis has been going after working class people in Florida against people of color since he first started off in office. And so he's been turning the dial, turning up the hate every year. And I mean, the abortion ban, the 6-week abortion ban, you know, taking books out of classrooms of children, expanding Don't Say Gay till 12th grade. They cited the Fugitive Slave Act for a version of an immigration bill that they were trying to pass this year. I mean, it's just undiluted hate. And the entire session, again, has just been a platform for that. And he's attacking so many people in his quest to run for president. So it's all concerning. It's all, you know, attacking people, really putting people at risk in the state of Florida. So, yeah, it was time to do a little extra, take a lot of action.
Professor Crenshaw, if you can put the Florida action, which was one of more than 100 actions across the country, into context, why you helped to organize this nationwide protest this week.
Well, Amy, as we've heard, Ron DeSantis and many others in the anti-woke campaign have gone after a number of constituencies. They've gone after the entire infrastructure that has been developed over the last 50 years to actually make equality a real aspiration. That includes the ideas around equality, the very idea that there is such a thing called structural racism, the very idea that intersectional forms of discrimination still shape the futures of all too many people. The time had come to draw a line in the sand. Too many people had been reading about this issue but didn't know how to get involved in it. And I think when the College Board took the opportunity after the George Floyd murder to offer a course on African American studies, to ride the wave of demands for frameworks to help people to understand how 60 years after the passage of civil rights laws, we could all watch a man be choked out by the police on the street. They were driving the possibility for a new course. And at the same time, this was driving the anti-woke cabal like DeSantis to create laws against actually using many of these ideas in public education. These two forces came together when the College Board decided to excise all of these ideas that were in demand from the course after Ron DeSantis said that these were unacceptable ideas. Well, I think too many Americans finally decided that it was unacceptable to allow this censorship to go forward without being heard from. So May 3rd was the beginning. It was the day of action where 150 activities took place all across the country, including two protests at the College Board. It is just the beginning. At freedomtolearn.net, people can get a sense of why it was important to draw the line, how they could get involved, and why this is a threat to our very democracy.
I want to talk about the Wall Street Journal expose that revealed through emails that the College Board's changes to its AP African American Studies curriculum did not include input from members of its development committee. The article quotes Nishani Frazier, a University of Kansas professor on the African American Studies Development Committee, saying, "We all know this is a blatant lie. In fact, the major changes which occurred came from my unit, and not once did AP speak with me about these changes. Instead, it rammed through revisions, pretended course transformation was business as usual, and then further added insult to injury by attempting to gaslight the public with faux innocence." Professor Crenshaw, explain the significance of this expose and all that it revealed.
Well, Amy, that was a letter written in fire. It basically confirmed what anybody who could actually read actually knew. The materials that were taken out, including intersectionality, black feminism, black queer studies, the idea of systemic marginalization, these ideas were exactly the ideas that DeSantis said were not educationally valuable, did not pass muster in Florida's anti-woke legislative terrain. So the fact that the very things that DeSantis didn't like, the fact that those were taken out, was met by the College Board saying, well, we did it with consultation of our experts, and some of the things we took out, we took them out because the ideas had been assaulted by a critique and attack that they were no longer educationally valuable. You could tell that they were not telling the truth, but this was the smoking gun. This was someone on the committee saying, we all know that they were not being truthful and we were basically being thrown out to justify it. The real question is whether there will be any accountability for this. What made the College Board think that they could basically say that DeSantis and trying to abide by anti-wokeness had nothing to do with it when they knew there was a paper trail that was going to show otherwise? It's telling us that the same lack of accountability for taking black lives also potentially applies to taking our voices and our responses to this history of our lives being taken. So that's why so many people were willing to say, not on our watch, enough of this. We're going to hold DeSantis accountable, and we're also going to hold institutions like the College Board accountable as well.
And Kimberly Crenshaw, of course, we should say that it was your work on intersectionality. You really have coined this term that has become so powerful, linking so many different movements, that was moved out of the required curriculum of the African-American advanced placement course. Your response to that?
Well, you know, we have to ask, why is it that the ideas that the anti-woke cabal are so upset about are ideas that people have found incredibly useful. People all over the world use the basic concept of intersectionality to make sense out of facts. You know, a lot of people say, well, it's a concept. It's a term. Why do we need it? Well, why do we need grammar? Why do we need to have rules to help us understand how to make meaning out of random phenomena? That's what structural inequality helps people understand. That's what black feminism helps people to understand. So taking out these ideas takes out our ability to analyze the situations that we have inherited, and importantly, to plot, to understand, to organize strategies for transformation. If they want to take it away, it's because it's important. Just like they want to take our votes away because that's important, they want to take our voices away because that's important. That tells us where we have to take the fight.
I want to turn to Republican Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida telling reporters in February why he opposed the original AP African American Studies course. And Nayila, I want to get your response.
This course on black history, what's one of the lessons about? Queer theory. Now, who would say that an important part of black history is queer theory? That is somebody pushing an agenda on our kids. And so when you look to see they have stuff about intersectionality, abolishing prisons, that's a political agenda.
And last April, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed into law House Bill 7, also known as the Stop Woke Act, which he claimed will take on critical race theory in the workplace and in schools.
We believe an important component of freedom in the state of Florida is the freedom from having oppressive ideologies imposed upon you without your consent, whether it be in the classroom or whether it be in the workplace, and we decided to do something about it.
So, Nayila Summers-Polite, you got arrested over his views this week because you were protesting them in his office. Your response?
I mean, I think it should tell us what kind of man Ron DeSantis is. He's unabashedly hateful. He is doing his very best to split us into silos. I mean, it's like he's never heard of Bayard Rustin. It's like he's never heard of so many black queer pioneers like Marsha P. Johnson. I mean, he thinks it makes it easier to pick us off if we are fighting in silos. So really what we were doing in his office on Wednesday was we were made up of all the kinds of people he's been attacking. We were queer. We are black. We are immigrants. We are people who need abortions. We're teachers and union members. And so we're not going to let him split us up or silo us off. What Dr. Crenshaw was saying about intersectionality is exactly it. Like, we need a multiracial movement to beat people like Ron DeSantis and the Greg Abbotts and the Sarah Huckabee Sanders, all these sort of new Confederate anti-woke people. So, yeah, this is what he's doing on his trek to the White House. He's spewing this kind of nonsense. And, you know, we've got to fight back against it. We've got to come together and really resist this kind of rhetoric.
And Dr. Crenshaw, do you think people are taking what is happening across the country, what the Missouri legislature voting, that they might defund the libraries, Llano County, Texas, saying when a judge said you have to keep the books on the shelves, saying we'll just shut down our library system? How many books are now being taken off the shelves across this country? Do you think progressive forces, perhaps the majority of people in this country, are taking this seriously enough?
Well, Amy, I think they finally are. I mean, one thing we know is that the majority really is on our side. Americans don't like censorship. They don't like the idea that there are certain things that they're told that they're not able to read. And they especially don't like being told that they're doing this or they're being told because they're fighting indoctrination. There's indoctrination at foot in saying that these are ideas that are so dangerous, so divisive to the Republic, that the autocrats can dictate whether we can engage them. Look, the whole point of academic freedom, the whole point of education is to present material for people to engage in, to develop critical thinking about the world in which they live. Yet the DeSantis's and the anti-woke cabal have the exact opposite orientation. Look, I have no worries whatsoever about people being exposed to ideas that are critical of intersectionality or of critical race theory or of structural racism. I know the ideas are strong and powerful enough to survive debate. But when the response to ideas that they don't like, including democracy itself, is to try to suppress these ideas, well, that's when we have a problem. And I think now many Americans are waking up to it. It was slow. They thought that it was just about something called critical race theory without understanding that critical race theory was the entire infrastructure that allowed people to identify racial inequality, racial power as a problem that still undermines our democracy. Mm-hmm. Now with the College Board doing what it did, people are seeing that the fight is against the anti-woke cabal, and the fight is also against institutions who need to be putting their money where their mouth is. You can't be pro-freedom of education and pro-anti-woke at the same time. The lines are drawn, and they're going to have to choose a side.
We just have 10 seconds, but Dr. Crenshaw, I saw you on Tuesday night. We did not know at the time what was happening at Broadway Lafayette subway stop, but Jordan Neely was killed by another passenger. He was black. He was unhoused. You tweeted, being black and poor in America should not be crimes punishable by vigilante death.
And that is exactly the question about how the lack of accountability for taking black lives extends to this current moment. We have to worry not only about police officers taking our lives, but individuals thinking that they're empowered enough to exact discipline, to exact lethal punishment for the possibility that they might be in fear of someone who needed help rather than needed death.
Kimberly Crenshaw, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Executive Director of African American Policy Forum, professor at UCLA and Columbia University. By the way, a very happy birthday to you. And thank you so much to Naila Summers Polite.
No one has told you how awesome you are this week, how incredibly thoughtful, caring, and community-minded you are. So allow us to fill your cup with goodness. Allow yourself to soak up the great tunes, good vibes, and warm, fuzzy feelings that tuning into this frequency provides.